David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 432. I'm your host, the word-devouring Steve Raker, along with my herald, WWX Kevin, and my Punisher bot, Andrew the LA Rabbit.
Oh, I was hoping to be Robo Dugan this time.
I'm the eyes in a cave.
We're twice a month, talk about anything Marvel, part of the Deliberate Noise Network, along with Indie Comic Book Noise, our sister show. But most importantly, we're sponsored by nobody. And speaking of the Deliberate Noise Network, it's been quite a month, eh, fellas?
Well, that's for sure.
The need for server space across the network, plus some new unfavorable service terms with our current provider, forced us to take an unexpected pause there. But our site is up, the show goes on, but with the compromise that the links to all but the last 100 episodes are currently inactive until we find a new home for them. Until then, they're in the Disney Vault for safekeeping.
Are they going to get released on VHS, Steve?
Yeah, as collector's items.
So,
item. Follow us on Marvel ICBN. Noise at on the Blue Sky.
So over 10 episodes from episode 273 to 299, between June 2016 and July 2017, we covered the Power Man and then Power Man and Iron Fist series from the Bronze Age, issues 1 to 100. Then in February, on episode 428, we circled back around and covered the post-Busick era from 101 to 110. And now, to stick the landing, we've got Power Man and Iron Fist 111 to 125. That were published over 2 years, from August 1984 to June 1986, because they went back to being a bi-monthly book halfway through.
Ooh, that's not a good sign. You better hold on to your hats.
It may have been sabotaging. Got to make room for those new universe books.
Oh, no.
How dare you, Steve? You know I went big on the new universe. I was getting in on the ground. That was my AF-15.
So the creative team here, I mean, we've still got the players are important. Denny O'Neill is still the longtime editor. He's been there through writers Mary Jo Duffy, through Kurt Busiek, and artists like Kerry Gamille and Dennis Cohen. And he was also editing Daredevil and Moon Knight during this era, with the top talent and successes of those books during this heyday. Jim Owsley comes on as the new ongoing writer right through the end of the title. This is his run. And he was, according to Owsley himself, a shooter fan, maybe protege or sycophant. In fact, he was always calling himself James Owsley, but started calling himself Jim out of reverence to Shooter at this time.
If he's that big a fan, Steve, how come he's not writing lead in a superheroes, huh?
And despite limited experience, he was given a tryout on the Falcon Limited series, then was made editor of the entire Spider-Man line after Fingeroth's departure. It's good to be friends with Shooter. And was, according to, again, Owsley himself, was walked into editor Denny O'Neill's office, where Shooter told O'Neill that this is your new writer for Power Man and Iron Fist. And that's that. But Owsley I give him credit. He had a his run had character to it that sets it aside as, you know, he gave the book a new status quo. He introduced a few new supporting characters. The super sick kid. There's a comma between super and sick, although he was super sick.
Also sick.
The CIA guy, Geordi. And listen, can we get a character guide for this guy? They never depict him the same way twice. Even when it's the same art team, he's not depicted the same way twice. He wasn't my favorite addition.
Oh, Lando Calrissian, Steve?
And Lando. Sergeant Tyrone King, who starts off as the guy that Misty Knight is cheating on Danny with, but more on him later.
You know, for those of you that weren't old enough, there was a time when all cops wore capes in their free time.
Yeah.
And then, so Greg LaRocque was the penciler on the first three issues, 111 through 113, and was also drawing Marvel Team-Up that and transitioned when that title became Web of Spider-Man. Remember, in the Thing book replaced Marvel 2-in-1. But Owsley and Greg weren't gelling, as Owsley puts it. So O'Neill brought on Billy Graham for a fill-in with Steve Geiger on 114. And I gotta say, I really like Billy Graham drawing Power Man and Iron Fist, as he does on the cover of 111 to start off this run, and the fill-in issue on 114. Then Mark D. Bright, who recently passed away at the end of this past March, just a couple of months ago, took over penciling with 115 and finished out the run.
I like that Bright work. It really, it grew as I was reading it. It kind of,
yeah.
I mean, maybe it was also Owsley figuring out his, I feel it took a few issues to kind of get it. And once it sort of came together, it started going better, but I wouldn't jump in maybe with 111 as your first issue.
No, it's kind of interesting, the action sequences, because I'd be like, there's like pages of like barely any words, but if you were doing like a time count, like the other pages have enough words, so it's an balance. Interesting balance.
I thought it was interesting that when Owsley was having, not gelling, as Owsley puts it, with LaRocque, both pencilers that O'Neill brought on to find someone that he'd work well with were also black guys, right? Graham and then Bright. I also like how Mark D. became Doc and Owsley became Priest. He cracked me up. The inker over Bright was Jerry Aserno, who Owsley, I mean, he pretty often, when he takes the chance, takes pot shots at him, saying he was heavy-handed, ruined Doc's art, was needy, whiny, hard to work with, you name it. And veteran Mike Esposito would come on to ink the final issue, 125. So that's your creative team. Issues 111 to 113 are a three-issue arc that introduce Billy Bobby, whatever. And this kid is the backdrop, or at least the bookends, for Owsley's whole run.
I didn't expect to see Mighty Man here.
Right? Captain Hero is Bobby. He's a molecule-altering mass and shape changer.
I mean, who doesn't want to play around with one of those, I guess? There's so many in comic book history.
The hero that could be you. We need a small kid so readers can identify. Make him really annoying, too.
Well, Owsley had a thing about wanting to play a kid off of Cage and thought that that would be a good foil for Cage to get frustrated over.
Because kids are definitely not going to be annoying at all.
Nor will they be drawn in acceptable proportions. And issue 112 starts a run of John Byrne covers right through issue 119, except for 117 that Doc did. So, and, you know, Owsley said that he wanted to do this kid thing and comes up with Billy Bobby here. But 112 has a second kid. It's like too many kids.
The kid.
Issue 112 also introduces Geordi, Agent of Smile, and Control 7, the sinister organization that they, you know, are opposed by.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting, like, all these special organization and agencies and
yeah,
all these guys in suits and speaking I'm sure, of which, what? That's the thing that shocked me, too. Not only is there, like, an agency of guys in suits, it's like Luke is literally, like, wearing a suit sometimes, and I'm like, it just looks strange.
I'm sure in 2028, Control 7 will anchor the Marvel Summer Event.
Yes. Has everyone forgot about Control 7?
That's why, I wasn't sure if this... McKay. I wasn't sure if this was, like, another, to really call it a running subplot, or is this the status quo to have these organizations in here? And I agree. And I know that part of Priest and Bright's mission here was to de-emphasize that effect of that aspect of Cage's character, saying that he, you know, black people don't talk that way and wouldn't dress that way, and you know, even with the best of intentions, it's always been white guys writing and drawing the book, except for Kerry Gamille and Dennis Cohen, of course, but you know, they went out of their way to make sure that they put him in suits and in more high-stakes cerebral situations, in corporate situations, in espionage situations. But, you know, there's some fun to getting ticked off at the Coke machine and punching it at the end of an issue because you're frustrated, too. I mean...
That's the thing I enjoyed was, like, him fighting with the Coke machine and ridiculous stuff like that. But they do go, like... to the north and get into, I mean, I guess you could go to the south too. I mean, anywhere there's snow.
No, don't go to the south.
Yeah, exactly. But it's funny when they go there, they have all their winter gear on, but it's like color coordinated to their colors.
Thanks, Christy Scheel or whoever was the colorist.
Yeah. Well, there's no point. I mean, you're still repping the outfit, but yeah, Control 7, Steve, more like Control Alt Delete.
Good one.
And sure, but part of my issue was the tone swings around so much in those early issues between the goofy kid stuff and then really dark subplots with the kid dying and this mysterious organization and things really. So I thought drop the goofy stuff and just make it more serious. For me, it worked better than the whiplash I was getting with, isn't it funny when the precocious kid makes fun of Luke and all that, and then just got to the dark and heavy stuff and grim. I mean, even by the time they get down to Pegasus Project, it starts getting pretty dark there. And I don't mean visually, yes, but, you know, tonally.
Yeah, no, there's not a little Windows in Project Pegasus. The Falcon gets brought in for just that reason, and Priest and Bright had worked on the character together on his limited series, except for that one issue Paul Smith did that I loved. And they Iron Fist contacts the Falcon as a way to get access to Bobby, who was brought to Project Pegasus because Bobby's sick. He's dying of like a radiation poisoning from the very meteor that house the radiation that gives him his powers. in 113, it's a Project Pegasus issue where Pegasus prisoner Breeze, who is from Avengers 225 and 226 and was co-created by Greg LaRocque, who's the penciler on this issue, he is a captive in Project Pegasus, and he influences Bobby to go on a rampage to try to free him and all that.
Not the most exciting character design, I gotta say. No. I wouldn't
right up there with
put that one. Yeah, my first part of my sizzle reel. But it's a pretty dark, you know, death and all sorts of bad images and everything. Like I said, it's not your kid running around setting up Home Alone type traps.
114 is the Geordi Agent of Smile focused issue.
What's with that cover?
Yeah. It's that's when Byrne was starting to play with the patterns and stuff. I didn't like that at all.
Yeah, the smile guy was a little too Deus Ex Machina with his
For sure.
magic cell phone that could do whatever the plot needed type of thing. It just felt like, in some ways, I wonder if they'd had another 10, like where they would have gone with another 10, 12.
Yeah.
Like I said, I felt they were getting their steam up and it could have really gone. I mean, not that this is bad, but for me, it would have been cool to see where they were going to go. Maybe flesh out this Control 7 versus Smile stuff. Because at points you're like, wait, maybe Smile is fake. You know, you're never really sure. And they play with that ambiguity.
Right.
A good success in my mind.
A lot of psyops. Power Man and Iron Fist were so good against Control 7 in helping keep safe and procure the little girl in issue 112 that Geordi tries to manipulate them into signing a contract with CCI, yes, a company that Control 7 has been harassing, so that Luke and the Fist will basically be doing his work for him without actually working for him, since they wouldn't do that. And he's got slides. It's a whole PowerPoint presentation and everything.
Yeah, I like the trick. I thought it works. Like, he tricks them into signing the deal with the each one sends the other one the fake note. And then,
right. I really like it. Well, couple that with also, like, the Heroes for Hire company starts facing, like, one government grievance after another. Like, they really put the pressure on them and sort of tear down the infrastructure that the series was built around, them having the Hero for Hire business. There's no more them at the office and them having cases and that kind of stuff, really.
Well, that gets hurt.
Change the name of the book. Like, instead of Hero for Hire, to be like Hero Full Time or Hero on Contract or
something. I just felt it's a little confusing to the state, because at some point, like, is Danny poor again or so? But then he's got money. Like that, like I said, it just felt some of it wasn't fleshed out in the same way. But I don't remember these comics, but I remember the cover to 115. Like, I didn't remember reading it, but I remember that cover. Because it's just a nice cover. It's got a lot of color and a great composition.
It's the looking down the barrel of a bazooka.
Nuclear bazooka, Steve.
Yeah. Yeah, what's the deal with that? I was like, you make that kind of weapon, and then it's like, you broke it. And I'm like, it breaks that easy? Like who's idea was that? I don't know. Maybe it's like the Tinkerer or some of these guys. Hey, I'm going to create this thing. And it's like, yeah, I don't think you thought that the ramifications of this through completely.
Well, so to give it to such an obvious buffoon, I mean, he's played for laughs, the villain in this one, as a real incompetent, but he has these dangerous weapons.
But was he incompetent, though? Because, like, you know, the birds ruffled and he was out there doing barrel rolls and shooting, snowbanks. Like, he was there he was doing his job. But you know what I wanted to mention, too? At the end of 114, the Geordi, you know, he seems like he's so in control of everything, but at the end, he goes home and he gets, like, a Dear John letter. So, like, you get to see that he doesn't really have his act together, and he like calls his mom for support. And so, you know, he's no Maxwell Smart, even though he does have that shoe phone that also can be a batarang and whatever else it needs to be.
Force field. Yeah.
So issues 115 and 116 are Stanley's war with his brother John carrying on the fight in 117. And that cover you said to 115, I also should remark on the cover to 116, because Byrne signs it with a whole bunch of R's because they're freezing out in the cold, so it's Byrne, which I thought was clever. Good old John Byrne. He loves comics, right?
He does.
So Stanley Loomis was just doing his job. He's protecting valuable secret corporate assets locked in a vault in this
allegedly
small installation in a snowy, isolated Alaskan tundra. And he's armed with this mech armor and the matching nuclear bazooka.
And which packs more than a punch.
Power Man and Iron Fist are now working for CCI, and they get hella dropped there for a inspection. But it's a surprise inspection, and Stanley is demonstrated as being trigger happy.
Well, so Luke does nothing to defuse the situation.
Yeah.
They're still playing into he's a hothead.
Yeah.
And will remain so. So mutual escalation of the issue. If that guy was a hero, this would have been a classic Marvel mix-up. But because he's a flunky, he doesn't end up getting his own series. Steve,
our team
would you like
is
the drones
way ahead of their time. the guys are Power Man and Iron Fist. They are in the predicament pretty quickly that, like, hey, wait a minute, we got dropped off here. We got to get inside just to be able to survive the night. But Stanley is refusing. He's got his job to do. Sorry, you're not cleared. But the Fist knocks him out after Cage breaks his nuclear bazooka. And they learn that the vault is empty. Wah, wah. He was protecting nothing. Then Danny and Luke hide in the vault, and Stanley's broken nuclear bazooka detonates. I mean, it really goes boom.
Wow.
You know, if you could go back in time, Steve, and invent like a Zipitone pattern that's just pipes and circuitry and all that stuff. Because there's a lot of nice, because when they're in the bunker, there's just all the kind of wires and stuff on the wall that looks like it's really cool, well done, but must have taken some time to put all that nonsense in. Or if you could just transfer your little random assortment of background gewgaws.
Also, it's a bunker and there's a window. If you want to get into a bunker.
Sorry, you have to. It's too small to squeeze through. In 116, they've been trapped in this vault for days, awaiting rescue. And Luke's like hallucinating, and Danny's like in this meditative trance state, trying to, you know, slow his metabolism and everything to survive.
Hard to believe his outfit looks so warm, Steve.
Yeah, but Stanley's alive, and he's disfigured and crazy, and he's out there and keeps attacking. They eventually get rescued by CCI, but the first rescue doesn't go so well. So the CCI CEO turns out to be a hot enough chick that becomes fond of Danny.
Oh, Steve.
And then Danny's like, hey, what's going on?
Stanley's brother John also worked for CCI, and he's twice as crazy and homicidal on top of it, and attacks the CEO, Maxine, on the subway, like with his assault helicopter, and Danny saves her, and John goes to jail. Also, Danny is dying of radiation poisoning from this exposure in Alaska. And Cage is thinking that, like, the mystical forces in Kunlun might be the answer.
I think he should just put some crazy 90s armor on and just wear that for the next 100 issues, and it'll be okay.
I also love how CCI and the art, and consequently the art team, all the vehicles are funky, like weird Jeeps, and the helicopters aren't regular. They're like sci-fi futuristic vehicles.
Also, with Danny being sick here, I mean, this is a major thing. So Cage calls Colleen, like, yo, how come Misty's been ghosting Danny? You know, she's supposed to be his girlfriend, and she hasn't seen him in a month. And at the end of the issue, Colleen sees Misty and some Lando-looking dude going out on a date and thinks to herself that she really can't front anymore. Misty's behaving badly. 118, 119, and 120 are a trio of issues that, well, three covers and barely one background for... was my first impression. And now the book has gone bi-monthly, which, like you said before, Kevin, not a good sign.
Maybe they'll come back. There'll be some hot young artists that'll come on issue 126 or something.
No, it could have been worse, Steve. You knew if it was all the covers had Punisher and Spider-Man on it, that's when you know they're really in trouble.
But in these three issues, we get a return to Kunlun after the fake-out of the build-up to 100, and then they didn't go to Kunlun. You thought it was going to be the whole thing? Well, now we finally are going back for the first time since issue 50. Or no, 75. 75.
Yeah.
50 is when Danny joined.
I was like, how are they going to figure out how to do this?
I was surprised the speculators aren't on this with the prominent appearances of Colleen and Dr. Druid, you know, pulling up your rare guests. Although I like Colleen as like a real kick butt
character. She always was. Not always. Right at the beginning, she was pretty bad. But with Angar the Screamer and all that, oh, geez. But in 118 is called What's Eating Colleen? And here we have Dr. Druid helping Luke, and now the emaciated, withering Danny and Colleen travel to Kunlun.
Yeah, first old man Danny.
And Kunlun's decimated. Chain Tang, the Dragon King's brother, is the great destroyer here.
Did you know he had a brother?
I didn't even know there was a Dragon King. So
there we go.
They run into Li Kung, the Thunderer, who I've always really liked, Danny's mentor.
Is this the real one, Steve, or another robot?
the real one.
Although I like him too, although that used to be my nickname after All You Could Eat Chili Night, Steve.
So the Thunderer explains that Iron Fist can stave off and reverse the effects of the radiation poison with the healing capabilities of the Iron Fist. He's just got to learn how to do the right meditation or whatever. So while they practice and get their funk going, Luke and Colleen go pay a visit to this Chain Tang guy in his cave. And he spars with Luke and beats him with the old falling rubble from behind you trick, right? It's like, oh, you missed. No, I hit the structure behind you and now you're covered. Then Chain Tang matches swords with Colleen for four pages. It's a pretty epic battle, taking up a lot of real estate of the issue. But Chain Tang beats her with a face to the rock wall and then morphs into a big old purple dragon.
Yeah, how about that for a splash?
A nice beefy guy.
Yeah, well fed.
You're thin, you're right, dragon, but you're big, hefty.
In 119, Danny's in a restorative trance, time traveling through the history of Kunlun and Chain Tang's involvement. See, the daughter of the Dragon King divorced and dishonored by this mortal from Kunlun that she had married and the guy's name was Shaolin, right? The brother of the Dragon King is upset about this and decimates Kunlun 1,000 years ago. Turns into a big dragon and decimates the thing. Then he turns this Shaolin guy into a dragon, imprisons him in a cave, blocked by his heart that is burning in a cauldron, and makes him Shaolin the Undying. That is part of the whole Iron Fist origin. All right, so that's kind of clever, right?
No, I like the back. It took me a minute to figure out how it all fit together, yeah. But once it did, I was like, oh, that's a nice...
Yeah, it's a big...
Kind of the gods getting involved with mortals. That never works out well for the mortals.
It's a big retcon.
Getting the revenge and all that. Yeah, I was like, this is cool. I'm down with... I mean, he was a dragon, so that makes sense. They turned the bad guy into that. And so in a sense, Danny freed that guy.
So, yeah, I mean, in the... well, right. But that, you know, after Danny comes along and kills Shaolau and obtains the Iron Fist, Chain Tang attacks Kunlun. Because he's like, wait a minute, you just like undid the sentence that I gave that dude for dishonoring my niece. But Master Khan is all involved in Kunlun and everything, and he's a pretty powerful sorcerer. So he imprisons Chain Tang, and the guard that watches over him has this special dragon-killing sword, right? But the daughter of the Dragon King disguises herself as one of those guards, goes to free Chain Tang for, you know, just wanting to protect her honor in the first place, but Chain Tang, not knowing that she's in disguise, steals the sword and kills the guard with it, not realizing it's the one weapon that could kill her, because she's a, you know, a dragon, too. So it's like, oh, no, I killed my own sister. So he rampages and raises Kunlun a second time, and Master Khan has to flee, because this time he's weak after the events of Power Man and Iron Fist 75. So now we see where that happened. So it's a big retcon, but it fits.
Yeah, I didn't have any problem. Like I said, I thought it was cool. Danny ends up by, and he wasn't just killing some dumb dragon. He was freeing some mortal that poor guy got mixed up with gods. Like I said, never good. I'm always on the side of the mortals, by the way. So go team mortal. Yeah, go Danny.
Spoiler, it's also in this issue that it's later retconned in Namor 25 that this issue is when Danny was replaced by a Hill 3 plant creature, pod person. So you can take that with a grain of salt.
Huh.
So just then, as Danny has learned the history of Chain Tang and Kunlun, the dragon version of Chain Tang shows up with a defeated Cage and Colleen, both unconscious, and the Thunderer is like trying to fight him off. But just then, Iron Fist comes out of his trance, and he's all jacked and pumped.
He's red, Steve.
And he's not red. He's green. And as the issue ends, this is a point of contention here. I mean, but as the issue ends with the splash of him all jacked up, it says, "You are Daniel Rand. You know, you are a living weapon and you are out of control." And I like that callback to the old way that the Iron Fist stories were narrated. But so on the red green thing, Andrew, on the cover of 119 and 120, Iron Fist is in a red and yellow suit. But he's all powered up at the end of 119 and he's still green and yellow. And on the double page splash of 120, even, he's still in the green. Then Cage and Lee Kung start talking about the red suit representing the evil that has consumed Danny, and poof, in the next panel, he's in red.
I think this was a Christmas thing, Steve. Celebrate the birth of Chow Tao, who is part of the Christmas.
This whole dark Iron Fist thing was Owsley's admitted homage, or as he calls it, blatant ripoff of Claremont's Dark Phoenix arc.
And because that costume comes back in when he's writing Black Panther, so that's kind of funny. And I also, my first thought was, oh yeah, they made a Marvel Legends figure out of the red costume.
Hey, nice.
I thought it was a good like placeholder for, so they can have the other adventures, because like Robot Iron Fist can just mindlessly battle that guy to a draw while the other guys do stuff. So I guess I didn't put much stock in this being some fundamental shift in the character of Danny. It's just some thing he got, like a cold or whatever.
Yeah.
What I like the most about issue 120 and this Return to Kunlun 3-issue arc the most is that issue 120 is a buddy movie. Right? But it's not Cage and the Fist. It's Cage and the Thunderer. And then they're like working together and they're impressing each other and teaming up on this quest to visit the Dragon King to intervene.
Yeah, they got to get the sword. So they got to, you know, make fun of each other and set each other up for bits. And you're right. It does feel very buddy movie. Two mismatched guys that'll never get along.
Two guys who both love the Iron Fist, you know what I mean? And they're trying to do what's right for him while the Red Iron Fist and Chang Tang are fighting each other. They're really evenly matched. So yeah, they gotta get the sword, and Li Kung recites the rune on the sword, and the spell banishes Chang Tang to a nether realm. No! And then Danny, acting possessed and wanting to defeat his foe, jumps into the portal after him, but Luke grabs him and pulls him out before the portal closes, saving him from being banished to the nether realm with Chang Tang. But the kicker is that the nether realm Chang Tang was banished to is Earth.
No one wants to be stuck there, Steve.
No.
But the math of him pulling him out of the portal was a little if he's leaping in there,
yeah.
How does Cage run faster than the leap to go? Anyway, it's a nice moment, though. I guess Luke does like Danny after all.
So what was eating Colleen? Well, we can't ask her because she's been unconscious since the Chang Tang turned, smashed her face into the wall an issue and a half ago. But what she was being bugged by was having to cover for Misty's infidelity and ghosting of Danny.
Yeah, I wonder if Misty had just been up front and dumped Danny. I think she would have probably been, okay with that.
Absolutely.
I think it's the whole run around and not having the courage to just be like, Danny, it's over. I don't like your green or red pajamas.
And her being stuck in the, and you know, having to deal with it because she's friends with both, right? I mean, she was introduced with, you know, in the Iron Fist comic and then met Misty afterwards, you know? So she's pretty loyal to Danny. Issue 121 is a Secret Wars 2 tie-in.
Oi.
Yeah.
You know, I knew about Spider-Man introducing the Beyonder to going to the bathroom and everything, but I never knew about this issue.
The Beyonder visits Billy Bobby and the Falcon and Power Man and Iron Fist at Project Pegasus, and they all end up fending off a SHIELD missile strike on a floating platform fortress out in the East Harbor. It's all crazy Beyonder stuff. But we do see an interlude with Chang Tang lurking on the streets of New York, assimilating and plotting his revenge. Plus, the issue ends with Misty and Danny trying to call each other at the same time, getting busy signals. And so Misty goes back out on her date with Billy D. Williams there, and Danny ends up going out with Maxine, the CCI CEO.
Yeah, I do feel so bad for this team. I mean, your book's limping to its inevitable end, and they make you do a Beyonder Secret Wars. Like, that's just cruel and unusual punishment. I don't know. It's fine. I don't know what you would do with that character personally. Like, what a What a hard assignment to be like, hey, push all your plots off for a minute and deal with this turd of a character.
Yep.
Well, it also made me think of Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, since the Beyonder shows up in that cartoon, and it's like, yeah, you gotta use your imagination. You gotta really stretch your brain there and think of something. But also, this issue ends, it reminds me of that Amazing Spider-Man issue. I guess anything with the door closing and someone's just like, oh, yeah?
Yep.
And then two people are like, we're not going to show you what's going on, but two people are going into an apartment and closing a door.
Issue 122, we had What's Eating Colleen. Now we get What's Eating Misty. It's more like Who's Been Sleeping With Her? Because this is Misty's new beau, Sergeant Tyrone King, getting all the attention and getting fleshed out this issue. He's a total badass, is basically the deal. I mean, he takes out punks recklessly, but he's in total control of the situation all the time.
Yeah, imagine, if you will, Clint Eastwood, Billy Dee Williams, Lando Calrissian, and a guy who's a trench coat acts like a cape in every circumstance.
Yep. And when Chain Tang strikes and captures Power Man and Iron Fist, King sees through Chain Tang masquerading as Luke and shoots him dead. There goes Chain Tang. Well, also, Colleen had to behead him after that, because that's what you got to do to dragons. But that was a pretty, you know, that was like a Indiana Jones shooting the swordsman type of moment, where like this Chain Tang thing has been built up, and then it's like, nope, Tyrone King, boom, boom.
A real elf with a gun situation, Steve. Right.
Misty leaves both Tyrone and Danny and town at the end of the issue. Jeez, what's eating her? And where's her afro? Which is an inside joke, because Priest was really proud of their portrayal of Misty without an afro. Right? Like, nobody wears an afro anymore, Owsley, Priest was saying.
And, maybe the Beyonder.
And he was laughing, you know, he laughs that as soon as he and Doc were off the book, they immediately put her right back in an afro. But I guess he means Burn 5 years later in Namor, because that's Misty's next appearance, so I think that's a little embellishing of making a good story about your changing her hairdo. Not exactly right after. They didn't exactly rush to change it back 5 years later. And it was Burn. Come on.
That look is kind of iconic.
So
she still has the robo arm.
Right? Gotta have the robo arm. Issue 123 is, first of all, remember that time that Kevin Maguire did a cover for Power Man and Iron Fist for Marvel before he ever did any of the JLA International stuff or anything like that for DC? I didn't, but that's a great cover, isn't it? Angry Cage on 123?
Well highlighted. Then you go right to a Ted Koppel splash page.
This is the one issue that Priest and Doc really delved into race. King is called in on a case. A suspect basically hulked out with glowing energy and kills the family that he rents a room from. And the police confront him, and he only kills the black ones, and he's shouting racial slurs, and he's rampaging through the city, only targeting black people. So Tyrone King and Cage and the Falcon intercept him. And, you know, it's King who takes him down, because King can do anything. This guy is amazing. But the military take the suspect into custody away from the police, and it causes this whole, like, no justice, no peace movement. And Cage is catching a lot of flack from the people that he's not representing. And, you know, this guy's got to pay, and he's not going to pay if the government takes him away and probably, you know, lets him off easy or turns him into a weapon or something. So Cage, Tyrone King, and the Falcon attack the military installation that this perp is being held in to get to him so they can make him pay, which is a pretty big deal, actually. And Cage confronts him in his cell, and they fight for 4 pages. Cage has got to prove something to himself. And then in the end, like O. Henry EC story from those days of EC comics, the glowy guy was Black himself, leaving Cage not sure like where to direct his anger.
I thought you meant the O. Henry twist was Cage's head placement, carefully blocking the naughty bits of the naked guy.
The issue ends with a scene with Falcon and King and Cage watching TV, and there's been a few scenes where the TV's been going and they're hearing all of the media coverage of this story and all of the twists and how the racial piece was so built up, and then it's really de-emphasized the motives now that it's not a racial issue. It's like almost like the media is disappointed. And I thought it was interesting that Priest and Doc, who were co-plotters, you know, went in that direction. What's cool is them sitting on the couch there, you notice that the TV, you get a shot from behind the TV at the three of them sitting there, and Tyrone King throws no shadow onto the back wall. You just see the edge of the couch. You see the edge of the couch, and you see Cage's shadow, you see Falcon's shadow, and there's nothing there for King. And then symbolically, the Cage, given the events of the end of the issue, reaches over and just turns off the TV. And it's like, you know what? He got himself all riled up because he was listening to people's criticisms of him and their voiced opinions, and he let it really get to him. And in the end, I think this was like he was symbolically turning off the rhetoric and not being, trying not to be as influenced with that. That's my thought anyway.
I like the issue. Hard to believe those three guys just sit and watch TV together. It seemed like a real, there's nothing to suggest that this is, I mean, it was done well for dramatic effect in it, but you're like, really, these three guys? But anyway. It was, I liked the issue well enough, and it was a nice, tonally different, and nice to have, like, sometimes the one story, like, no subplots, no Iron Fist, no nothing, they just want to tell this one thing, and it's done in that super compressed way, where now it would have taken a few issues to, you know, there's no way all those events would have happened in such a short period of time, but we're still in the magical era of comic book time that I love so much, where they're like, yeah, all these stories, like, oh, the kid hops a plane to Chicago that day and he's there the same, like, all that stuff is fine with me, but I do wonder if for modern readers, if they'll be like, no way would all this stuff happen in one day type of thing.
Issue 124 sports a cover by Keith Pollard and Bob Layton, which is kind of cool. So there's background, there's foreground. Nice busy cover. In this one, Cage with Maxine and Jordy's help, they dupe Danny. So he gets his groove back. He gets out of his funk, and they get him to wear green again. They set up this whole scenario where there's like this Eastern mystic at a compound, and the Fist has to infiltrate it, and then talking to the guy puts him at ease, and he gets his mojo back. But there's a lot of great pages of, like, you know, Danny infiltrating the compound and doing his thing and evading the guards and stuff. And after the very Cage-centric issue prior, having a very fist-centric issue, I thought was a good balance.
You have to do the whole G.I. Joe Snake Eyes type of thing.
Well, it's also funny. That's the era of, like, we're going to have guys with machine guns fight guys with swords, yeah, and they'll be sort of equal, which I don't really think... History has told me that's not a great way, necessarily. You're usually pretty safe betting on the guys with all the machine guns, but I did enjoy the tone of it is that whole, you know, like, ninja versus mobster, which is endlessly fun. Although I have to say, based on her interactions with him and has portrayed these, I don't really know what Maxine is seeing in this Iron Fist. Like, he's kind of a mopey, whiny. Like, we know the character to be a richer pastiche, but she's only seen him as this, like, right, mopey fist.
No, yeah. Yeah, she's pretty much just written in there to be the consolation prize for the Misty thing.
So, if I've learned anything from a cartoon, it's when someone's aiming a gun at you and you have a sword, you can just chop off the front of the gun.
Yes,
then it won't work. And then it's good.
Yeah, for sure. Then it's shooting buckshot at you.
Only if you're a bad... So what you're supposed to do, Kevin, is cut the bullet in half so each side goes on both sides of you.
That'd be good. Issue 125 is the 41-page finale issue. Priced at $125.
You know, I'm just paying those prices. These credits on Marvel Unlimited, they're slightly off.
This has...
I mean, I don't know if they'll get around to fixing that anytime soon, but, you know.
Mark Bright pencils with Mike Esposito inks. And this was in June 1986. Now, again, if I go to... I've been taking a lot of quotes from some essays that Priest wrote on his website in 2000. And going into this issue with Iron Fist's death and everything, and it being the finale issue, context is worth having before we see how they executed their plan. So I'll quote Priest here and say, read from his words, "The expedient thing to say is Iron Fist's death wasn't my idea. It was my idea in the sense of that is how I chose for him to die, brutally and senselessly. I was ordered to kill Iron Fist because the editor was deeply resentful of Marvel's decision to cancel the book. A book the editor, comics legend Denny O'Neill, invested himself in and worked very hard with myself and artist MD Doc Bright. We were all pretty upset, but Denny was outraged. Power Man and Iron Fist was a critical success and was selling in excess of 100,000 copies. Not a major hit in those days, but the book was certainly profitable. Then the company, for no apparent reason, decided to change the publishing schedule from a monthly release to bi-monthly, which automatically depresses sales, and, once the sales projections skewed downward, then became justification enough to cancel the book to make room on the schedule for a new line of books that became the infamous and notorious New Universe. Angered by the slight to our work on the book, in an editorial meeting, Denny's assistant suggested we kill Iron Fist and cast the blame on Power Man. Doc and I really did not like the idea, but the editors were adamant, insisting that if we didn't write the story, he'd assign it out to someone else. I agreed to write the story on the condition that Iron Fist's death be senseless, and actually, extant to the story itself. The story and plot lines had resolved themselves by the time Iron Fist fell asleep in the hospital and was subsequently killed. It was shocking and unexpected and completely meaningless, which is how we all felt the company had treated us." And, you know, thinking of the comics history and the timeline, it wasn't long after this that Denny went back to work for DC. So I think he was really ticked about this.
Hey, look, Steve, Marvel was right. The New Universe was a big hit. I enjoyed every issue of it I read. And I read them all. Look, sometimes, you know, they got to try new things. Like, that's how it goes. People bag on it, but I thought they were all fine comics. I mean, it was something different, but it wasn't like they were bad or anything. It's become, I think, fun because it wasn't commercially successful to knock them, but they were fine comics.
I laugh you say not commercially successful, and those titles went on for a long time.
So in this issue, Danny and Luke get attacked in public by an armored bazooka-welding maniac. It's Stanley's brother, John, who murdered his way out of prison and now has armored up like his brother was. Uh-oh. Iron Fist jumps up the fire escape of the building that Brother John's firing from. And those, I love these kinds of panels where they have like the lighter colored figures in between the darker, like they have like ghost figures that show the movement as Iron Fist is like scaling the building. That's so cool.
And then he was just like, oh no, not the radiation again.
Danny eventually takes down Brother John with the Iron Fist, but it turns his entire costume red again. Brother John escapes in the aftermath, and Danny is all distraught. You know, he thought he solved this with the Mystic and everything. And then Maxine confesses that his fix was a ruse, and he freaks out. Luke reacts rashly and quits Heroes for Hire and, like, their friendship. He's out of there. And then we see Brother John wiring Maxine's car and Tyrone King's motorcycle with explosives. Then the Falcon calls Danny to the hospital because Bobby is dying from his radiation poisoning. But the Fist now has this new ability with the healing powers of the Iron Fist, so he's able to keep Bobby alive with the Iron Fist's energy.
But just barely. Like, he hasn't mastered it yet to where he can... So this is the thing that drains him, so that it explains why he's non-responsive. But I thought it was interesting that... Okay, so they didn't want to do this purportedly by his own word, but they decide to burn everything down, like the Gem Theater. Mm-hmm. Like, they really...
Yeah.
They could have went they... in a different way if they wanted to... If they were really that unhappy, they could have... minimize the unnecessary collateral damage. I thought that
it's like they were trying to hurt the IP, and in doing so, they were really hurting the readers more so than the company, because these characters, they just took them off the board for 5 years, you know, until John Byrne came around and wanted to do something with them. And so this Brother John, he firebombs the Gem, but Jordy takes him down with his phone, you know. And then there's this bit where Cage seems to be leaving Brother John to die on the subway tracks, but he doesn't. But it's not clear whether Cage meant for him to or not. And meanwhile, at the hospital, Dr. Pym has used the time that Iron Fist has bought them to fashion these synthetic quasi-negabands to keep Bobby alive. And they're able to switch off with Danny, who's exhausted after, you know, sharing his life force, basically, with Billy Bobby.
So always risky, this idea of pulling in the superheroes to regular people to help them.
Yes.
I always think it's a dangerous thread, because then it's like, well, shouldn't they really, wouldn't... the world be better served with Reed Richards curing disease, you know?
Yeah,
I just don't like that thread being pulled so much.
So the Fist, exhausted, sleeps in a chair next to Bobby with Cage on guard outside, but he falls asleep and the chair breaks and he leaves his post to get a snack. And Bobby wakes up and Danny is soundly asleep. He's like in the Odin sleep, you know? And the nurses at their station are all asleep, too. Now this is getting weird as I'm reading it, right? And then the nurses are all asleep at the station, too. But Bobby wakes up, and he's in pain. Iron Fist won't wake up. Nobody's answering his calls. He's yelling out. He's calling the nurses' station. Nobody's out there. So he starts pummeling Danny to wake him up and just pummels him to death against the wall.
Like you do.
Yeah, that guy was a jerk anyways. I thought we established that, Steve.
But it's like, is that senseless enough for you, true believer?
That's one word for it.
So then Cage comes back just in time to see Bobby explode. And now he's taking the rap for murdering his former partner because bludgeoning somebody against the wall, it's just the kind of thing Cage can do. But Cage ain't going to the slammer again. He vowed that to himself, so instead he escapes custody and is left a fugitive on the run.
And relaunched into a new title.
Nope. Maybe 6 years later. Maxine gets in her car, leaving Danny's funeral, and blows up and dies.
Then, hard to believe she didn't have, like, better security or whatever if Control 7 was after her, but either way.
Then Tyrone quits the police force after seeing Cage being what he figures is falsely accused for his partner's death, and he gets on his bike. The bike explodes because it was wired too, and he just wipes it off. Like, he wipes it off, like, his clothes are fine, his hair is fine, he's not singed at all. Who the heck is this guy?
Oh, Steve, he had one of those cell phones. But back then, all the cell phones had magic powers that we saw.
So go back to Owsley and his comments about writing the series, and he said Tyrone King seemed impervious to harm, he favored the night, he cast no reflection and had no shadow. But he wasn't a vampire. He said Doc wanted to make everybody think King was a vampire, but he wasn't. And 13 years later, I don't remember who King was, but he wasn't Master Khan, Iron Fist's nemesis, as was eventually revealed in the pages of Namor. With Owsley's blessing, though, John Byrne called him and discussed all this with him before he did it. But he said that, Owsley said that he and Bright spent many a cheery afternoon whiting out shadows and reflections that their eager and headstrong inker put in, arrogantly fixing Bright's obviously shabby work. If Tyrone ever was seen to cast a shadow or a reflection, it was because the inker put it in. More love for the inker. From Owsley.
So, I don't see how he could. He's around during the day all the time, and he eats regular food. Like, he, because one of the opening things, it's like he's here every day at 4 on the nose for breakfast.
Well, he's not a vampire, they said. But who was he?
But I don't think who he would have been. There was not, at no point did I ever, like, he's not following the Marvel rule of vampires from any point in it. I can get the no shadow thing, but I don't know. It just felt like if they were trying to fake out for vampire, it was not
well in the red and blue to be like Dracula covers, and the way his like you said, his coat always flowed like a big cape and that kind of thing, that kind of stuff. The series also ends with Brother John still on the loose, and he's never seen again and never caught. Ooh, he won Stanley's war.
Although I also don't think if you're in the Marvel vampire world at this time, you would have a vampire with a last name King.
He wasn't a vampire.
Yeah, but if they're trying to fake out that he's a vampire, I'm like, we already have Hannibal King.
It's not a tumor. It's not.
You give him a different name, like Bilbo or something. But yeah, I just felt the Lando thing was very, because that's where I thought the red and blue came in.
The issue ends Misty finding Luke, who's on the lam overlooking the ocean and a sunset, so they must be somewhere out west, unless they're on the west coast of Florida or something. And the last word of the series is Cage declaring a very unsweet Christmas.
Yeah, he dropped the sweet earlier in this run. He does still use Christmas, but I don't think we'd gotten a sweet Christmas in quite some time.
So Priest reiterates Fist's death was supposed to be shocking and senseless. It wasn't bad writing. The fact that 13 years after the fact, people are still annoyed about it speaks to the quality of the work, in fact, and the impact of which has not diminished over time. But
exactly. It's why the top 5 list of Spider-Man stories always has Brand New Day, right? And, yeah. Because they still talk about it, you know? It means it's the best ever.
So this run, I mean, you know, there was a reason we stopped at 100 back in 2017, right? That like I wanted us to get to 100 because I wanted to reread all that stuff. But post 100, since revisiting these last 25 issues, I get that after the big dramatic climactic issue 100 and the changes in the creative team after that, that there'd be some wandering around until the next ongoing thing got going. But I just didn't necessarily care for this next ongoing thing. Like, I didn't like that the neighborhood and the people in it, the gem, the soda machine, DW, Bob Diamond and his school, even the hustlers and the street folk, they were all replaced by high-stakes espionage and the world of, like, corporate high finance and stuff and exotic locations. And Power Man and Iron Fist basically became agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. without actually becoming agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And it just took away a lot of the family, what the supporting characters that made the book be a family and be critically successful, I think.
I can see that. Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed this stuff. It fished around a little, and I thought, like I said, another 10, 12 issues, I would have been curious. Like, as they kept boiling it down and refining it, I would have been interested to see where they go, and it was good enough reading it, but it did have a few head-scratching moments where I was like, this is just weird. But I don't know. I'm also not reading it every other month and all that. You know, you're just reading it on a computer or whatever, so it's a bit different, bit of a different animal for me than it would have been, you know, getting it off the rack back then.
Yeah, it wasn't bad, and it was definitely weird. And you're like, oh, wonder where this control thing is going to go. I mean, some good ideas in there, but yeah, it's just, I don't know. I don't have connective tissue, I guess, with the old stuff. Like, you just sort of, I don't know, maybe you could have, like, modernized some of that stuff somehow. I mean, it's kind of, I had, it's funny, I just had, like, some stray thought about, oh, I wonder if at one point when they were making that Netflix series, if they looked at some of the corporate intrigue and they're like, oh, man, this would be the greatest Iron Fist thing if we just focused on this stuff.
It seemed like they could have used Rand Enterprises maybe instead of CCI, like cut out a layer of extra nonsense and just maybe use it out of his Danny's company type of thing, maybe
forcing them to get involved, right? They would have had to get involved because it would have been his assets, right?
That kind of thing. I mean, I do like that it's Heroes for Hire, so there's like that for hire, but it's like, oh, what if we like spitball other ideas where you could be for hire or people want to hire you or stuff like that. Like, I think that's decent material.
But that's the 125 issue Luke Cage, Power Man and Iron Fist series over 12 segments. That's a pretty good feat.
Yeah.
We read a lot of good comics.
I mean, I certainly wouldn't object if they brought back Iron Fist. I mean, he must have been dead for quite.
So Iron Fist next appears 5 years later. 5 years later in Namor 22 in November of 1991. And Luke Cage next appeared just before that in June of 1991 in Marvel Comics Presents number 82 in just a short little story called Hero in Hiding. He's been on the lam for 5 years.
Wow.
Of our time, real time. Crazy, right? Like, they did nothing with these characters, and Misty and Colleen, they did nothing with any of these characters for a half a decade.
And then he gets his own book in the crazy 90s there.
Well, they also, I feel like they were, I don't know, I wonder if at some point they were looking at this thing saying, being like, this is a relic of the 70s. Because it really did. I mean, they were doing what they could to fix it, but it really did have the, you know, the guy doing kung fu and the black boy.
But a relic of the 70s would be something, a great idea to have a book about, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, who doesn't want, that would be something different. It's something like, oh man, this book is such a relic of the seven. Like, these characters, not only do they not exist in real life because they're total cliches, but they're of a bygone, they're cliches of a bygone age. That's, I don't know, that's a lot of characterization, you know? I don't, that's fine.
Well, I could see how in the late 80s, early 90s, it might have felt like, what do we, you know, we need this new, the new edgy direction comics was, you know, these guys don't have enough pouches and all that. You know, they would have tooled up. Well, you're right. Kevin Cage's new series, didn't he get the new outfits?
Yep.
Very 90s. Yeah.
I also remember like a letter, and like it was like Maximum Carnage when they had like a bunch of characters from the 70s and 80s teaming up with Spider-Man, and then there's like some letter writer saying, "Oh, he's teaming up with all these rejects from the 70s, all these guys that I don't like and everything. Why don't we get some new modern heroes in here and everything?"
Oh boy.
Yeah, so I mean, I didn't really know much about Iron Fist being dead. Like, of course, you hear of the legend and everything, but when I'm reading, like, he's back and everything, so I'm enjoying where he's showing up.
We can finally get to those Byrne Namor issues now.
Yeah, I know. They've been on the docket for a long time.
Prince Namor of Atlantis is king of the sea. I love all your segments, Steve.
I have to get them going again.
Although, will you bring us on for those?
If you want to read any of those books. If you want to, well, there you go. All right, thanks, guys, for reading these books with me. All of them, all the way from Luke Cage, Power Man, Hero for Hire, number one. Next episode, Recent Reads. We're back on a roll.
All right.
Until Master Khan is depicted grooving to Chaka Khan, make mine Marvel. Later.